Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome you. Today, no guest because this is the progressive hour called Talk Back. It's all about sharing your points of view after I get us into the area of health and nutrition, environmental issues, a short commentary, and a little in-depth discussion of blueberries today from Susan Evans from Life Extension. Then it's all up to you. So we have a lot of time, so let's begin. As you know, we should be consuming more of the omega-3 fatty acid foods. Many vegans are concerned that they wouldn't be able to get enough of the DHA fraction of the omega-3 fatty acids without having fish, but that's simply not the case. For those of us who do get our omega-3 fatty acids from vegan sources, organic raw flaxseed oil is your best source, but you can supplement that by including blackcurrant oil. Also, you can use walnut oil and avocado oil. Of course, we should be having coconut oil each day as well. Here's the latest on the omega-3 fatty acids. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, done at Columbia University Medical Center, and here's what it says. Consuming the omega-3-rich foods could reduce the risk of Alzheimer's by lowering levels of plasma beta amyloid. Quote, foods that are rich in the omega-3 fatty acids will end up lowering a blood level of the protein, which has been implicated in the onset of Alzheimer's disease memory problems. And they're talking about foods that are really healthy foods. Now, here's what I would say in lay language. First and foremost, Alzheimer's doesn't start as Alzheimer's. It generally starts as memory loss. Then it progresses to early, intermediate, and advanced dementia, and then into early Alzheimer's. Now, the challenge of this is that many times people are simply not aware they have dementia because they can't remember what they've forgotten. As a result, you'll notice having the same identical conversation with someone, and yet they will not have remembered that they had the same conversation during the same day or in the recent past. Now, what is happening is this. The person is tipping. They're tipping at a biochemical level in the brain. There's an amyloid, B amyloid plaque, which is a type of protein that is laid down in the brain that interferes with the functioning of the brain. Very similar to the type of plaque buildup in our arteries that interferes with the full and healthy flow of blood through our arteries. And especially true when you have a backup and blockage of the carotid artery leading up to the brain. It means that there's less blood pumped from your heart that gets up to the brain. And that blood carries your oxygen and it carries your nutrients. And when you're deficient in these nutrients and oxygen, then the cells of the brain, the neurons, begin to die. Now, that's when you tip. The question then is, what causes the tipping? Well, as an example, alcohol will cause massive oxidative stress. It causes free radicals. It causes inflammation in the blood, and that means inflammation in the brain. People don't realize that we have to look at the body as a whole organism. And if we do that, then we can understand that if you've just consumed a soft drink and it has fructose in it, and that fructose goes into the brain, or it's got caffeine, it goes to the brain, or if it's got phosphoric acid, it goes to the brain, or it has aspartame, it goes to the brain, then it's no different than chewing where you have mercury fillings and the mercury goes in the blood and goes to the brain. It's no different if you eat a piece of fish that's high in mercury, which most fish would be, and it gets in your blood and it goes to the brain. Now, here's the confusion. Because it may take decades of killing neurons, breaking synaptic connections, and dendrites, the wires that connect neurons, no two people end up having the same identical manifestations. And because it's not easy to determine with a group of individuals cause and effect, you're always working on the negative side. Now, what do I mean by that? Let me give you an example. I grew up in a community that when it came to authority, it was very fatalistic, meaning if I suggested that there was something wrong with the high amount of animal proteins being consumed, or fat, or coffee, or cigarettes, I was immediately reminded that our doctors, the ultimate authority on health, recommended that women smoke Lucky Strikes, others Chesterfields, others Camel. In fact, it was even shown babies being held by their mother while the mother was smoking, and as if that would be a calming effect upon the baby. Now, when you have done such a magnificent job of promoting a concept that smoking is not just healthy, but actually relieves anxiety and is good for you, and you've done that for 150 years, then imagine what happens when the first of the health activists come along and suggest, well, smoking's bad. First, you're going to get the whole idea of, well, isn't it our freedom to choose? And the answer is yes, it is. Now, because I believe in freedom of choice, I also have to mark the line that I do not cross, even with my family or friends, because I don't consider any of the people I know to be stupid. That does not mean they don't act stupid or make decisions that in retrospect were stupid, but they're not stupid. Most people make mistakes in life because of their belief systems and the conditioning in the belief system. Now, that's not the same as having no clue as to why they're making a choice or any other consequence they have. So if the doctor said it was all right to eat meat and to smoke and every meal finished, breakfast, lunch, dinner, you had to eat everything, you couldn't allow any food to go to waste because that was considered an unethical principle. All right, that's fine if you're serving small portions, but once we begin to serve larger portions, you could easily double the amount of calories that you required. And we know that 3,500 calories in excess of a body requirement or 3,500 calories less than your body requirement, you'll either gain or lose a pound. So that means that if you were perfect in your diet, but you just had one piece of bread, let's say with 110 calories, well, in about 35 days, more or less, you're going to gain a pound. And you're thinking, how'd I get this weight? I haven't changed anything. Well, you just have one slice of bread. You mean one little slice of bread? Not in one day, but after 35 days, if it was 100 calories, yes, 3,500 calories. But we stopped counting calories and healthy calories in food long ago. Now we're advertised, we're commercialized to get the biggest amount of food for our bucks. So you see a giant foot-long sandwich, and it's under $6. So you're thinking, that's a good deal. I can get a whole meal for under $6. Well, economically, that may seem like a good idea, but nothing in that meal is good for you. The tomato and the lettuce come from, in all likelihood, either heavily sprayed produce, certainly the tomato is heavily sprayed, as is lettuce, but also the meat is genetically engineered, the cheese is genetically engineered, the cheese is a common allergen, the meat is has to be cooked so that it doesn't have a bacterial level that it would otherwise have, or parasites. That means in the cooking process, that meat, you're going to end up with heterocyclic amines. The bun, which is what really fills people up, and when it goes in the body, it just turns to sugar. It has a very high glycemic or sugar level, spikes your sugar right away. So now you are full. So now people determine that they're okay if they're full with a meal, rather than, am I healthy with a meal? So when I was growing up, the idea was that you should be full, especially if you came, as I did, from a middle-class working background, where one of the most important responsibilities was to make sure that you had a school to go to, public school, get a good public education, have a home. Ours was a small 1,200-square-foot house, and to have food, 3 square meals a day. and most people consider them responsible for being able to provide that. But almost all the food when I grew up was processed. It was only when I went to the country in the summertime and we spent time on a farm there that I got to eat really fresher food. Otherwise, everything was canned. Virtually all the fruits for 8 months a year came out of a can. They were all loaded with sugar and preservatives. Fish was never fresh unless it was the summertime and you got some catfish out of the Little Kanawha River. Otherwise, it was always canned tuna or canned salmon. And my mom would make these salmon patties, in which she'd take breadcrumbs and Worcestershire sauce and egg whites and blend it all together with the salmon and then fry those. And that was considered a typical Friday evening meal. And they'd have breadsticks. Now, why they had breadsticks, you know, they were fish breadsticks, but they did. And they'd deep fry or bake these breadsticks, and then you get this tartar sauce. None of this was good. All this was bad for us. Yet, because we were outside running constantly, never remember getting a ride in a car. It was always, oh, you can run there, or you can bike there, and indeed we did. So we were wiry and strong. We didn't overeat, but on Sundays, my mother made sure that there was a 2-inch thick steak. Now, I would guess today that's about a 24-ounce steak. And when you decide by, and different cuts of meat have different percentages of fat, one of the thickest fatty foods is filet mignon, and it was considered a big deal to be able to have some filet mignon because that was supposed to be the wealthy people's cut. And indeed, my buddies who were wealthy, Steve Haig, Bill Mildren, whose dads were bankers and lawyers, they would talk about the kind of meat they ate, and it was, oh, filet mignon, because you were supposed to eat a better cut of meat. And poor people ate oxtail, which was the cheapest piece of meat, or a T-bone steak. But the porterhouse steak, each cut of the steak and the round steak, you paid based upon, it's all coming from the same cow, but the more fat you had, except for filet mignon, it was supposed to be a cheap piece of meat. But people love the taste of fat. Fat's what gives a lot of the quality of flavor to a food. That's what gives the French fry its unique quality, the crisping up of that. Deep fried chicken, it doesn't taste the same as baked chicken or broiled chicken. So we liked our foods barbecued and deep fried. And the pizzas became very common. None of this was good. It was all bad. So on top of that, after a meal, they would smoke cigarettes and have coffee, generally 2 cups of coffee with sugar in the coffee. And they would frequently have a dessert. Now this is on top of already being in excess of the caloric content they needed. And so it was completely common by the age of 30, where I grew up, for everyone to be overweight. And by 40, diabetes was common. By 50, heart disease was very common, high blood pressure, people were on meds. And outside of an occasional, well, let's say, softball game, you never saw people after the age of 30 doing any sports at all, in part because they didn't understand how masters and seniors should be able to compete with people their own age. That even in New York City under Fred LeBeau, it took a lot of arguments with Fred before he was actually convinced that maybe a 50-year-old running against an 18-year-old isn't really fair. You think, Fred, and yet you have no idea how many conversations I had with him about that. But finally, it was a big deal when you could race up to 40 and then over 40, and then take the top three. Now it's 5-year increments. If you really want to do it right, have age to age, year to year. That would make it more fair. In any case, now imagine this. Imagine the lifestyle. We were seeing people smoke and drink alcohol, and younger people didn't drink wine. Where I came up, people didn't drink wine. They drank what they saw in the movies and in magazines like Playboy. So it was very common for people to have a bar and it had to be a well-stocked bar. So you go to their house, and you didn't say, could I have a wine? Unless you were Italian, they did, but everyone else had bourbon. This is the South. Bourbon was the drink. After, I can't tell you how many times I saw people kind of act as if they were culturally hip by having after a meal, they would have brandy and then smoke a cigar and blow cigarette smoke into the brandy glass and then drink the brandy. Well, because I didn't drink and I didn't smoke, but I was their friends, I didn't criticize any of this. I just knew that they all had bad breath. But that, you know, it was the thing to do because that's what hip young people did. Now, today, those same people are as likely to go into a health food store and have themselves a shot of wheatgrass juice or a glass of vegetable juice. That is hip today. And a lot of people are conscious today are doing that, but not everyone is conscious, nor does not everyone wants to be conscious. So keep all that in mind when you take a look at a person with Alzheimer's and then backtrack it. Go back to the beginning. And then when you start asking the questions, did you smoke? Did you drink? Did you take medications? Did you take any, like, antipsychotic medication, antidepressant medications, anti-anxiety medication? Oh, yeah. All those destroy the brain tissue and the central nervous system tissue. Did you eat sugar? If so, what kind of sugar? How often? Soft drinks? Oh, yeah. And did you eat meat? How often? How much each day? And then you start to realize that now they have built up all this plaque from all this free radical damage. There is no other outcome they should expect except dementia and Alzheimer's. Now, if you took an individual who did just the opposite yesterday in Harlem, there was John Q, there was Sid Howard and Sam Skinner. Now, they all have something in common. They're all friends of mine. We've run and raced together over the years, and they're all vegan. And they don't drink, and they don't smoke, and they don't do drugs. Now, you look at them, and you're looking at models of health that are dynamic. You do not see the aging process in them compared to their same age group. They're not even close. And yet in our society, instead of focusing upon those who are healthy and who are not aging as other people are and saying, gee whiz, why is that possible? Or why is your brain still sharp as a tack? Why don't you suffer from memory loss or dementia? Or why don't you have the wrinkles? Or why don't you have the muscle sagging? Or what? Instead of looking at all the things that are so typical with so many people, it's almost as if we're afraid to get an example of how powerful healthy choices could be. Because here's the idea, and this is the final part of this. If you start realizing that every single choice you make in life will have a consequence, either constructive or destructive, then the question is, why would you want a destructive outcome? But let's say that you're where I grew up, and you say, it couldn't be that bad because authorities would have stopped us. Our doctor wouldn't have, you know, our doctor cared about us. Absolutely, I believe that. I know I really liked my family doctor, and we had a family doctor, and that's who we all went to. Well, what if the family doctor was just as conditioned and just as programmed to believe that the American diet was as good as it can get and there was no harm from smoking? And after all, how many years did it take before a lawsuit was actually lost? Over 100 years, every single lawsuit showing that there was a problem with the health consequence of tobacco was lost by the consumer. And to this day, I believe we would still not be banning or limiting cigarette advertising or its sale had we not caught the seven heads, the seven CEOs of the tobacco industry lying under oath about their knowledge of addictive substances in tobacco. And I may mention the FDA had all that knowledge and kept the proprietary secret of the seven major tobacco industries at the cost of 20 million lives lost. Now, put that in perspective the next time someone tells you that all the people at the FDA have your best interest. No, 20 million Americans suffered and died who didn't need to over the past 100 years because of cigarette-related injury and death. Because they knew the truth and they withheld it. Only when a whistleblower found out the truth, and then it was made public, then they had to settle some $247 billion with the state's Medicare programs. But it didn't really cause much in the way of change because people were already into the cycle. So where I grew up, nobody changed. Nobody changed their diet. To this day, nobody changed their diet. Nobody changed their belief in authority figures. So we're just not dealing with the consequences of a bad food or beverage or lifestyle. We're dealing with an enormous amount of propaganda and the power of the media and official institutions to keep us believing that there's not a problem. Until one day, there's such irrefutable proof that it is that we're forced to change, and we don't like that. So now you know that when we think, oh, gee whiz, yeah, when they say that omega-3 can help it, yes, it can, and I'm glad that they gave this. But what about the other 125 foods and beverages and nutrients and herbs and a homeopath that also help prevent plaque buildup in the arteries, plaque buildup in the brain, oxidative stress, free radical production, and inflammation? Why can't we also focus on those? Well, in January, I will be. I'll be doing, hopefully, if enough people apply who are qualified, I'll be doing the largest lifestyle and behavior modification study group ever on Alzheimer's. More on that in an upcoming program. Now, tomato juice shows sports nutrition potential. This is a good article from the Journal of Nutrition. And here's what it says, quote, a daily glass of antioxidant-rich tomato juice may reduce markers of oxidative stress and damage after exhaustive exercise. And this was for 5 weeks, and it wasn't a lot of tomato juice, about a 4 ounce. So why? Well, because there's a lot of good antioxidants in the tomato juice and phytonutrients. So would that mean that antioxidants and phytonutrients from other juices could do the same? Probably. I would suggest a grapefruit juice, watermelon juice, and coconut juice combined would be your best way of helping with a post-sports drink. Now, if you take the oral zinc, I'm going to suggest around 20 milligrams, you could end up reducing the common cold symptoms in adults. Here's the latest from the Canadian Medical Association Journal, done at Toronto and McMaster University. They say, quote, people who take oral zinc may experience shorter common cold symptoms, those who do not. That's good news. And then finally, Amish farm kids remarkably immune to allergies. I'll quote this from Reuters. Quote, Amish children raised on rural farms, northern Indiana, suffer from asthma and allergies less often than Swiss farm kids, a group known to be relatively free from allergens. Quote, the rates are very, very low, end quote. Well, how about this? It has nothing to do with being raised on a farm. It has a lot to do with the fact that those farms are almost all organic and that almost all Amish children are not vaccinated. In fact, in one group, the largest group we know of in the United States that were not vaccinated, Amish children had almost no autism. And when someone says, oh, but we found 7 kids who were suffering from autism spectrum disorder who were Amish, wrong again. Those were adopted children who were not Amish and had vaccines before they became adopted. So when you don't take in the vaccines and overwhelm the immune system and set up antigen responses that can manifest as common allergens that can then depress the immune system, actually it overstimulates the immune system, then it depresses it, making the person more susceptible to inner ear infections and tubes in the ear. And then that also makes the kid more susceptible to allergens. Why? Because when we clean up the diet of anyone diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, one of the first things the parents will say is, gee whiz, you know, Jimmy just doesn't have the same allergies that he had before. You'll see less bedwetting, common allergen, by the way, to dairy. You'll see less brownness, discoloration under the eyes. You'll see less puffiness under the eyes. Mucus in the mouth in the morning. Mucus at the corner of the eye. Mucus in the nose. Scabbiness in the nose. All of this is due to common allergens. So that's just something to add to that. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. And before we go to our calls, just two things that I thought would be interesting. This is for those who still believe that hydrofracking, which this administration and this Congress supports, the president support, and we do not, A, because we don't get money from the utility industries, in the gas industry, in the oil industry, the nuclear industry, and to do so and then serve in the public interest would be just simply, it would just be a conflict of interest. It's amazing what you can do in telling the truth when you're not beholden to a special group of people. So this is from Yahoo.com, and it's an article entitled Fracking Fallout in Ohio, Throwing Up Until the Blood Vessels in My Eyes Burst. I'll quote, this is short, from our environmental segment. When Jamie Frederick bought her home outside of Youngstown, Ohio, a little more than 3 years ago, she was unaware that her neighbor had already leased his land to a natural gas company. Neither did she know that the gas company had already fracked the shale beneath her home. I lay on the bathroom floor night after night, thinking I would surely be dead soon, throwing up until the blood vessels in my eyes and cheeks would burst. At that time, I did not know what fracking was, or that I was deliberately being poisoned. But I do now. When she started to get sick, blinding headaches, nausea, mysterious illnesses that ultimately took her gallbladder, she had no idea the two were related. But they are. While the human health impacts of fracking are still being documented, the natural gas industry shrugs off any such claims of a connection, contending there's no proof. Medical studies are underway to prove the linkage, but that will take years. In the meantime, it is not a stretch to the imagination that pumping hundreds of thousands of gallons of chemicals into the earth and groundwater will inevitably and adversely impact both land and man. Fredericks went public with her story last January on the steps of the Capitol building in Youngstown. She is a reluctant symbol of a growing relationship between fracking and people getting sick. In May, Academy Award-winning actress Melissa Leo put life to Frederick's words near the steps of a different capital in Albany, New York, where Governor Andrew Cuomo is right now considering lifting his state's moratorium against fracking. Leo's audience in Albany included state capital workers, lobbyists, legislators, and staffers, as well as New York-based musicians Natalie Merchant and Felice Brothers, Joan Osborne, Citizen Cope, John Sebastian, and more. Before Governor Cuomo makes his decision, he should consider Jamie Frederick's experience. Quote, I had my gallbladder taken out, but continue to have what seems to be never-ending intestinal flu. It became so bad that I soon developed an infection in my intestines, as large as a grapefruit, that ate through to the outside of my skin. When I was finally admitted to the hospital, doctors said I would have been dead in a few days if I had not come in when I did. They were baffled and could only tell me this should not be happening to a healthy 30-year-old woman. This condition is typically only found in third world countries. It turns out that before we moved into our house, the neighboring property owner who lives out of town had signed a gas lease. No one told us. Out of the 62 acres signed off by my neighbor, apparently the best place to drill was right under my home, as close as the law would allow. Tests of our water revealed high levels of contaminants that are a result of the hydraulic fracking and drilling process, such as high levels of barium, strontium, toluene, and several others that I will not be able to pronounce. My medical mystery was now solved. This is why I had been sick for so long. The time when I was most sick, I was drinking over 2 gallons of this water, unfiltered, each day. As we investigated deeper, we discovered that several wells had been drilled nearby, tucked quietly away in the woods that surrounded our home. My husband never got sick because he hardly ever drank the water at home. I always bugged him to drink more water, and I'm glad now that, like most husbands, he never listened to me. It's hard to say which one of the 10 wells within a half a mile, 15 within a mile actually cause the contamination. It only takes one bad well to poison a water table that can sometimes stretch out for over a mile. And that means a lot of homes. When the convoys of trucks and drilling equipment began rolling down our once lonely, quiet road, our lives changed forever. Living through the drilling and fracking phase was a truly terrifying experience. We were given no notice whatsoever as to what was to happen to us and had nowhere to evacuate to which our three dogs and cats could go with us. We felt like we were trapped in someone's idea of a sick joke, 24/7. We couldn't sleep for days at end, and when we did, it was only for short naps in between the explosions they were using. We tried using earplugs covered by headphones while listening to the radio and still could hear them plainly. Worse yet, we could feel it as a constant vibration through the house. That was just the drilling. The actual fracking lasted about 3 days. Dishes rattled in the cupboards. Pictures fell off the wall. There was cracking sounds in the basement. I've never seen my dog so terrified. The gas storage tanks and radioactive toxic waste tanks also were there as well. Now, that's not all, but that's some of it. Here's my suggestion. Why don't you write and call Governor Cuomo and ask him to be fair? He has already taken the pro side, the pro fracking side, and wants to allow fracking in the poorest states that have the least resources bordering Pennsylvania, like Tioga County, to use the fracking. Once it starts, it'll go statewide. An estimated 75,000 wells can be dug here. Now, last week at this, it was last Saturday, I was in Oklahoma. And an interesting thing when I went to Oklahoma, because I like to see for myself, I like to do my own first-person investigative reporting, but they even had wells right as you fly in into Oklahoma City. I mean, I'm talking about right beside the airstrip, 20 feet from where you fly in, there are wells all up and down the airstrip in the grass. The most amazing thing. And everywhere you look, there are these wells pumping. And yet people had gotten accustomed to the idea that they were better off having their economy stronger and more jobs because the wells were the small amount of money they got for leasing their property to hydrofracking and getting used to all the earthquakes that they never had before than the health consequences of these wells. That's the other side of this. What happens when people are aware that there's a downside, but they don't want to accept it, and they believe they have a right? If they want to lease their property, and if they're falling on hard times, should they not have the right to lease their property, even if the consequence will be harm to themselves or other people in the area? And that's the back push of that argument you get from people on the ground. I'm Gary Knoll. That's just some of the latest on health and healing. Our number, our callback number, is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We're going to take a little break, come back, and take your calls. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Now we're going to our phones. Happy to address any of the issues that you feel are important. And if you miss any of our programs, please go to the archives. About 97% of all the programming, my programming at least, is listened to by people generally in the evenings when they download the shows. Let's say hello to Christine from the Berkshires in Massachusetts. Hi, Christine.
Hi, I have a question about oxalic acid. Mm-hmm. I've been a vegan, very delightfully loving it, and a juicer for 10 years. I really rarely have missed a day. Feel fantastic. I recently came upon the fact that if you have so many dark greens, which I predominantly juice, that you could get an excess of oxalic acid with unpleasant or sad health effects. And I don't understand, I want to understand more.
Okay, well, that's very similar to people who say that soy is bad. There's a lot of half-truths out there. And I suggest you simply do a little bit more research. Here's the fact of it. Yes, you can find oxalic acid in different green products, like watercress, for example, or in some parsley. But then put it in perspective. The body has a way of processing all of these acids so that they are not toxic to the body. In fact, some of the foods that we eat actually have natural pesticides in them, like, for example, mustard greens. Do you ever eat mustard greens? Find it kind of burning? Well, the reason that a lot of the products we have certain acids is to protect the actual plant from insects eating them. It's like you rarely find grapefruits and lemons attacked by any insect because they're too tart, same way with too bitter, same way with garlic. So understand that the coloring of a vegetable or a fruit is frequently to protect it from insects or protect it from excessive sun exposure. Now, when we eat these, when we juice them, we are eliminating much of the fibrous material, what is called lignocellulose. And in that fibrous material is frequently many of the acids that we would be getting plenty of, and that's thrown out of the body. What you're really getting is mainly water, and in the water you're getting your chlorophyll, antioxidants, and your phytonutrients. That's what your body benefits from. And unless a person has a predisposition to a gross calcium imbalance, or let's say if someone had an excessive goiter position and had too many dark greens in their diet, I would certainly then suggest that they have a moderate amount of greens. But otherwise, that's a rare situation, and the greens should only be consumed in this combination. You must always have a diluting juice, and I suggest cucumber and celery, or cucumber, celery, and cabbage as you're diluting with apple. That's the perfect blend. Then if you want to put some really dark green and stronger and bitters in there, like watercress or parsley, that's fine. But you wouldn't want a whole juice of that. First, it would just be way too strong on the system, and very few people could even hold it down. So this way you get the benefit of all the greens. The oxalic acid is not a problem, and you're fine. And this is what we have found in millions of people drinking an enormous amount of juice, and it's always best the juice is organic. Okay, all the best to you. Thanks for your call. Let's say hello to David from North Carolina. Northern California. Hi, David. Turn off your radio, David. Listen to me or your computer. David, you got to turn it off. We'll take another call. All right, let's say hello to Luann.
Hello, Gary.
Hi, Luann.
We have a number of people that are emailing me about a recent segment on 60 Minutes. And one person in particular, I thought, asked a very pertinent question. And they asked this. They said, a lot of times when you talk on the radio, you have what some people would be considering a liberal position, sometimes conservative, and yet you stand alone in your progressive thinking. So this person asked, we want to know, what is your position, your political position? And two of the areas that they ask is, how do you feel about a shrinking government? Because this guy, Rehnquist, was talking about taking away things like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security programs, and not having any new taxes. So they want to know, what is your position on that?
All right. I was in my office and saw some of this Norville has become famous as probably one of the most single powerful Republicans and conservatives in America. His idea is that you should shrink the national deficit, of meaning the amount that, of the national deficit or the national budget, gross domestic product, that the government actually spends, to about 8%. I think that and that would be reasonable if he didn't deal in a double standard. Now, this is where it gets a little confusing, so I'll take this piece by piece, and I'm going to ask you the questions, you answer me, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that you should be paying higher taxes to pay for inefficiency in bureaucracies?
No.
Why not?
Because that just doesn't make sense.
Okay, fair enough. Whatever answer you have, I just want it to come a little, just flow it out there, is that you're not being judged on this. Next, if we have the number one reason of not having jobs is because we've closed down, since 2000, that's in 12 years, we've closed down 58,000 factories where people at one time actually made a living wage in those factories, and most of those factories have been there for a long time, for decades, and therefore a person could reasonably expect to be able to have enough money, disposable money, to have savings in the bank, to pay for an education, at least a public education, and to have a standard of life and a quality of life, and return for their labor, they expected to have a reasonable compensation. That's all gone for 58,000. Then in came the equity partnership people, and they would buy up, like Bain Capital, they would buy up companies that either were in trouble or had perfect balance sheets, meaning had no debt. And they would give these people some financial incentive. Let's say that your company was worth $10 million. You have 100 employees. Your employees make good livings. They work there for a long time. So you come in and you offer them $20 million. And let's say the people are then, for signing and selling, the directors or the owners get a bonus of $1 million each. It's very easy for people to think, gee whiz, you know, the company's still going to exist. It'll still have our name on it. We'll still have a position of ownership in the company. Why not? You know, and especially the younger generation. You know, they want to show me the money. So now what they don't know is that the company is bought for $20 million, and the money is almost never the equity partnership's money. They use bridge capital from a Wall Street firm like Goldman Sachs, who get a big fee up front, generally 10%. But then when the whole idea is to take this company public. So now over the next 12 months, you go into this company, you say, you don't need 100 employees, you only need 50. And what are you doing with all these extra divisions? Let's sell them off. So now you downsize the company, you actually make it more profitable, but you're stressing it, and then you go back to the same bank and say, now we want $40 million. So the bank gives you $40 million, but it doesn't go to the company. It goes to the equity partnership people. That's their fees, their commissions. Now the company has to pay back $60 million, and that's where they go broke. Now, in order to stay even paying the fees, all the employees no longer have a living wage. They no longer have the benefits they once had. Now people have frequently had to work for far less money than what they did. So now instead of one person staying home and raising the family, now both people have to work. That's another thing. Having people do an excessive amount of work, but not paid a living wage. That's another thing that's contributed to our problem. The third is importing visa employees with high degrees of education and very skilled. And let's say for a $100,000 person been there 20 years, it's got seniority and really knows how to do something in a computer company. Now you hire a 30-year-old from India who's got a PhD in that area and you pay him $40,000. Well, you just save $60,000 on an employee, but it's not one employee, it's 8 million employees. 8 million American, highly technical, highly advanced, highly skilled people you've eliminated. Now then, those people paid taxes. They paid state, local, city, federal taxes. They had invested in their home. Their home was their equity. Then the real estate market collapses and the value of their home goes down. Many cases, most cases, below the mortgage is now below the value of the market value, and as a result, they're underwater. So now the property values go down and the taxes go down. Now, where's the local community and where's the state supposed to get the money to fix the roads and the potholes or clean the streets in the winter from snow or to have enough fire or police? They don't. And where are these people supposed to have enough money to keep their kids in college? They can't. And what are they supposed to do? Live on credit. But hold on, if you live on credit, then you're living on debt. Ah, but there's part of the alchemy. We make debt an asset. So if a million Americans went out and bought something today using credit cards, then that's debt. But that's not shown as debt. That's shown as part of our gross domestic product. So we're showing people buying something as being prosperous, and I'm saying that's all a lie. The majority of people buying something, they're buying it on credit. Therefore, they're indebted. Plus, not only do they have the immediate devaluation of what they just bought, clothes, car, homes, all going to go down. But they're also paying anywhere from 29 to 1,000% interest, depending upon if it's a debit or credit card, if you're paying your payments later in your payments, compounded interest. All these things occur. And yet on television, you see the blue card. Get money back. Get 1% back. Now, think of that. You're getting 1% back on a blue card, and you're paying 29% interest on whatever you purchase. That makes a lot of sense to you, doesn't it, Luann?
No.
No, yeah. You give them 29 cents, they give you a penny back. I mean, do they really think we're that dumb?
Well, clearly they do, and clearly some people act that dumb.
You're right. So now that's another problem. Now, what was the biggest single investment in a person's life?
Well, it's usually their house or their education.
Their house. So for the last 40 years, people's homes, historically growing at 1% to 3% per year in value, enough to keep up with inflation generally, took off in 2000, sometimes going up 20 to as much as 100% value per year. Their taxes went up. And as a result, people thought, my goodness, I have an ATM machine. If I need $100,000, I've got it. I just, you know, go to the bank and say, hey, my house was, I bought it at $100,000. It's worth $300,000. I want $200,000. Bank said, sure. But once again, what is that? Is that a liquid asset or is that a debt creation? You've just given your asset to a lending company. Now you have debt. And no one ever pays that back in a period of time where they're profiting from it in most cases. So now what you have is you have the largest single group of people who bought houses and built houses in the last 30 years were who? Baby boomers.
What's that?
Baby boomers and senior citizens.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're going to think that's going to happen again?
I don't think so.
Of course it's not. So the largest single transfer of money in American history from one group, the baby boomers, to another group, the bankers and financiers and mortgage makers, that's over. So now what has happened is the children of baby boomers, the X generation, or their children, the Y generation, do not have the money that they thought they would have in order to go out and buy their houses. Now, from the housing, you've got furniture, and you have appliances, and you have building materials, and concrete, and lumber, and tiles, and glass, and all these sub-industries that are dependent upon a continuously growing market. But there is not going to be a market growing, because right now we have 92 million Americans who are over the age of 47, and we have 65 million Americans who are from 1 to 18. And you put those two together, you're dealing with two-thirds of the American population who, for all intents and purposes, will not be going out now and building new homes. Only a tiny fraction will. And those who have the extra resources to do so, because everyone has now seen, you don't want to jump into this deep, dark water because you don't know what's in there. So now for the future, we do not have that economy. Hence, we're not going to have a tax base. So that's part of the problem. So part of the problem is the average American today is no better off in their disposable income, as they, in fact, less so than 30 years ago. Now, the Republicans and Norville say, but we want small taxes. And I say, I'm with you. I want small taxes. But the trouble is, those who make the most money also have the loopholes to pay the smallest percentage of taxes. What if you just had one flat tax for individuals and one flat tax for businesses, and you could not make any deductions? None. So there'd be no need for an IRS. There'd be no need for a 60,000-page tax rules. You would just have, let's say, for corporations, 15% across the board. That would give America an additional $2 trillion. And you forgive the $26 trillion that's sitting offshore that was made in other countries because they didn't want to pay the taxes in America, and you give them a forgiveness, an amnesty, they pay 15%. Well, 15% of $26 trillion, again, you're bringing in more trillions. So on one hand, if they said no more taxes, I would agree, providing that all of us were susceptible to the same way of paying our taxes, a small tax on corporations, and put it into the sales tax. Therefore, a person's really paying taxes on what they buy, and hence they can control what they can buy. I don't believe people should pay a tax on their labor. Now they say, but we want small government. No, they don't. They want astronomical government. And this is the bad part of the story. This is where, if you really had people on 60 Minutes who had either the knowledge or the temerity to ask them to nail him, then you would have brought up the $1.4 trillion this year in the military-industrial complex budget, about $785 billion on one line, and the rest are all these agencies that are non-disclosable, meaning we don't know how much they make. Then, let's say if you say, okay, you want this also shrunk down to where you, quote, cut it in pieces and drown it in the bathtub? Why don't you drown the military-industrial complex and all these spying agencies in the bathtub? Now, how about the FBI and the CIA? And how about all these other agencies? Why don't you drown those in the bathtub? Oh, you don't want that. You want those to grow. Well, that's hypocrisy. So they're absolutely hypocritical. Well, what about all these subsidies to the big oil and big gas and nuclear? Now, you didn't raise any cane this year, over $28 billion going to subsidize, that's all American subsidized money, for the nuclear industry. So why don't you take out the subsidies, the welfare for the wealthy corporations? That's going to save you an additional in public, in the for-profit pharmaceutical, in the health insurance, hospitals, nuclear, big agra, and banking. That's going to save you an additional $1 trillion. Well, gee whiz, now you're really saving money. And you've made an equal tax that nobody can get out of. But they're not willing to do that. And that's the hypocrisy of their system and those who subscribe to it. Hope that answers that question.
Well, I didn't expect the short answer, I'll tell you that.
So you see, and here's my last thought on this. What would you say if I said that there was, of the $3 trillion spent in Iraq, and an additional approximately $3 trillion spent in Afghanistan when you factor in the cost of long-term medical care for those injured and reconstruction and all the money laid out, $6 trillion. Do you realize $6 trillion in the United States would have changed our entire country? We could have de-ghettoized every city. We could have supported every small business person who could have supported then the hiring at a living wage of over 15 million Americans. We could have rejuvenated small businesses. We could have made America competitive again. We could have ended hunger in the United States. And yet, that they didn't want to support. They wanted to support something that we got nothing but pain and suffering for Americans who were injured and killed, and those in other countries whose families were injured and killed, and an environment devastated. These people should be taking a little look at the spiritual consequences of their choices, something they seem incapable of doing. So I believe that about 50% of all bureaucracy should be cut down to where they're actually functioning on behalf of the public and we should not fear our government. Our government should not have the control over our lives or have the right to invade our lives, nor have the right to commit crimes against humanity and be held non-accountable because they have the power to intimidate, threaten, arrest, coerce, or disappear those who are critical of
it. I guess the question then becomes, Gary, how does that happen? How does the American public respond? What do we need to do to make that happen? Because they're into self-preservation.
Yes, what we do is we simply become aware of how much fraud, corruption, inefficiency, incompetence exists within these bureaucracies, and then begin to support third-party candidates and progressive movements that challenge them. So support anti-nuclear, anti-fracking, anti-genetic engineering. Take your money out of their banks, don't shop in their big stores. Then you're exercising a freedom of choice that shows you're aligning with a truly more humanistic and healthy way of living. We're out of time. By the way, Luann, the telephone rings, wife answers. A pervert with heavy breathing says, I bet you have a tight ass with no hair. The woman replies, yes, he's watching TV. Whom shall I say is calling? Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Knoll.